Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. We are not together. Steve's a bit under the weather, so we're connecting via phone because we're playing it safe. Before we get going, last weekend we had a lot of fun hanging out together. I had a blast because, unlike what we said on the show, we actually did order the Tyson Jones pay-per-view, and we hung out and watched it, and the fights were entertaining enough. I kind of feel bad for Nate Robinson because I'm still not sure if he's cleared his head.
Here's the thing. I don't feel bad for Nate Robinson. I just think that that's boxing. I don't feel guilty for him. A lot of people are like, oh, well, you should be celebrated for just getting out there. No, I'm not going to celebrate a guy who clearly wasn't prepared for what he got himself into. While I can appreciate the sort of, gumption to get out there in front of, the millions of people that watched it, it's boxing, so you need to be prepared for it. It looked like he had never even taken a punch to the face before, the way he was reacting. So, I mean, it's just like, look, I was rooting for Nate to succeed. I am no friend of Jake Paul, but I mean, he got his ass beat. Yeah. So, it happens. He wasn't prepared for it. Given his age, his experience, and everything else, I don't see why he's even thinking about it, right? It's one thing if you've been doing this your whole life, like a Tyson or a Roy Jones, but he hasn't, right? He was a scrappy basketball player in the NBA. He was a pretty decent college football player at the University of Washington. The idea that because he did those things that his skill set were transferred to boxing because he's athletic, I don't know who pumped his head up to the point where he thought he could take a pro level fight, even with Paul being new to the scene. But I have no mercy for Nate Robinson. He should have not been on that card, and whatever happened to him happened to him.
He did a reverse Roy Jones. Roy Jones was a great boxer who then became a basketball player briefly. The difference is in basketball, you don't get punched in the face and left laying flat face down on a mat.
Right.
The fight itself was, the Tyson-Jones fight was nothing spectacular, but it was two guys who went out there and did a lot more at age 50 than most people, over the age of 50 than most guys I know. So I kind of took some inspiration from it. I kind of looked at that and said, they may not look like their old selves, but that's just one more example of me not having an excuse for letting myself get out of shape, because these guys, Tyson lost 100 pounds to get back into that kind of shape. And did you hear he admitted he was high during the fight?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we agreed that we knew that.
Wasn't
everybody?
Yeah, I was going to say, he was not alone. And including that was Snoop Dogg, who smoked a blunt the size of a fucking burrito. That was the highlight of the night. The mini concert with him just blazing a blunt out there was hilarious.
Not only the mini concert, but the fact that, I've seen Snoop in concert before, but the fact that he does what he does and doesn't miss a beat, I mean, with the hits that he takes and his ability just to continue conversation and everything else like that and not even have the hint of a cough, I mean, it's just a mutant superpower. I've never seen anything like it. It's remarkable. So, that part was a lot of fun. I think as for Tyson and you gathering inspiration, I think that's great. That's kind of the point of why he did this. I think it was to prove that, the idea that age is nothing but a number and that, you're never too far gone and he got his fire back and he wanted to inspire people. He wanted to inspire young boxers. And I think he wanted to inspire, 50 plus year old guys and say, look, we can do it. And so the fact that you got that out of it, I think is great. I'm never going to stop lifting, moving, and staying active and lifting heavy and not just going in there to to do curls and bench press 225 as many times as I can. And
that feels like a shot. Like,
no, it's, I mean, that's, I mean, it's not a shot, but I mean, that's most guys your age that come into the gym, that's what they do. So it's not a shot at you. It's just your,
oh, I know,
general,
I fit a stereotype. I'm aware.
Yeah. It's a demographic thing, but I mean, I think that, but there's no, I mean, look, you know, I don't just lift, you know, using stuff that I learned in high school. Like I constantly dig into, you know, what's being taught, what people are saying. I take things from powerlifting, strongman, physical therapy, you know, general health and fitness and things like that. And I apply it, even though I primarily compete, but I want to be healthy. You know, I'm just not doing this just to, you know, bang the heaviest weights that I can. There is an aspect of health to it. So, you know, Mike Tyson was also, you know, that was inspirational for me as well. But I mean, it was just great, obviously, for me to see Mike Tyson back in the ring. He is my first and still probably my biggest childhood hero. And so, you know, I felt like he was like, Roy Jones was overmatched in that fight, because Roy Jones' plan was like, look, I'm like, Roy Jones was in very good shape for a guy his age, but I don't think he was truly ready to fight Mike Tyson in above decent shape for any extended period of time. And he even acknowledged that taking some of those punches were brutal. So,
go ahead.
No, I think that, you know, we didn't, I think had, Roy Jones' plan was a good plan, right? Just lean on him and close the gap between the two of them, like at the actual physical space, so that Tyson really didn't get an opportunity to unload on him. And if he wasn't leaning on him, then he was constantly moving, which is a great strategy, especially against Tyson. And it definitely was affected and kept him from getting knocked out. But I mean, Tyson still got him with some body shots that just looked like they were crippling.
Yeah. And body shots hurt way more than getting hit in the head. And I thought it was hilarious after the fight that,
I don't know if Michael Spinks agrees with you, but okay.
Okay. Well, the funniest thing to me was after the fight, Tyson was like, let's do this again. Let's do this again. And Roy Jones was like, fuck that.
Yeah, it was like, ooh, I don't know. No, not today. Not anytime soon. Yeah.
When you said you're glad I mean, inspiration, I thought you were making fun of me for wanting to fight while high. So that's why I laughed at that.
Oh, no. Although, it might be a good idea. Although, what's funny is the UFC is actually starting to test for cannabis use during the fights now, because they're considering it a PED, and the fact that
it dulls pain.
Yeah, it calms you down. It dulls pain. For all the reasons that cannabis is beneficial, they're saying that's why you can't have it in a professional fight sort of situation. Which
I think is a terrible idea.
What's that?
I think it's a terrible idea to test for it. I think you're going to find out that there's a whole lot of guys in MMA who smoke weed.
No, I think they know it, and I think that they're. I think that they are adjusting the test. It's not necessarily are you smoking weed in general? Like it's, I'm sure you probably have to have I'm sure there's a threshold, you know, like,
okay.
Like the don't smoke right before we test you threshold.
Okay.
You know,
sure. Don't go hang out with Joe Rogan threshold.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's one of those things like, you know, you can't smoke a few days before the fight and that'll probably get you where you need to be. But
so, anyway. Yeah. So we've gone 8 minutes without mentioning Donald Trump, and that has to come to an end because this is probably the craziest week of this administration. He's sensing the end, I think, and he's trying to pretend that it's all good, but clearly it is not. Did you happen to see when he called Governor Ducey from Arizona and he literally, as he was signing the certification of the election, and he literally looks at his cell phone and sets it down and just completely ditched a call from the president?
Yeah. I mean, what else is he supposed to do? And honestly, what is Donald Trump doing? I mean, so what was that phone call supposed to be? Or, hey, by the way, that thing you're doing live on TV, don't do it right now.
I'm guessing that's exactly what it was supposed to be. And he's causing drama wherever he goes. So he goes down to Georgia and whips it up and calls it the most corrupt election in history. People in Georgia are protesting in the streets with guns and threatening the life of the Georgia Secretary of State. I'm going to get into this in a bit.
Wait, are you confusing Georgia and Michigan?
No, that happened in Georgia too. They threatened the Secretary of State for certifying the election. I don't know if they marched to his house with guns, but there were like death threats and things like that.
Okay.
So it's, okay. I mean, it's, and you would, any non-narcissistic sociopath would say, guys, everyone calm down. We're going to do this right. You know, this is no time for us to do crazy things. In 2000, when there were two candidates that were way, 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 way closer fighting over one state, that we were in flux for like a month. And there was never, I mean, it was curious. It was odd. There was definitely a lot of tension in the air, but there was nothing like this. This is how far we've devolved with this guy in office, and I can't wait for him to be gone. I'm sorry that my voice is cracking up there.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, you know, I literally thought about this today. And it was just, you know, once the inauguration is over, Biden is in, then I think I completely unfollow Donald Trump on social media, right? Well, I only follow him on Twitter, but I mean, it's just like the guy is just so toxic. I just, like, there's nothing that he says, you know, it's just, it's the constant lies. It's the constant manipulation. It's the constant partial truths, you know, and giving himself wiggle room, right? Like saying things that are, it's not really a lie, but it's relatively inaccurate, or it's true if you look at it from this sort of angle. You know, the way people will twist themselves to justify the things that he says, you know, all in the name of, to say that Trump is playing this game of 12-dimensional chess, that he's just so much smarter and so much more advanced than everyone else in politics and in business. It's just, I'm tired of it. I really am. You know, and it's unfortunate. I mean, I've really lost some respect for a lot of people that I had a fair amount of respect for over this amount of time, probably the last year, you know, dealing with Trump, just because they just won't be honest about what's going, you know, right. Like you can't get a baseline of truth. And they will sacrifice themselves. They will, you know, I don't want to call people liars, but
they'll twist logic.
They will twist logic to just all in the name of Trump, which is just scary. And the funny thing is that people say, well, you know, Joe Biden doesn't look, man, Joe Biden is really, really problematic. I don't like him at all. I never have. I thought he was a bad running mate for Obama. I don't like his policies specifically on the Second Amendment and guns. I'm not really sure where he's at on a lot of stuff, because between him and Kamala Harris, they've really flip-flopped on a lot. But that being said, I just felt that Trump was really, really dangerous for our democracy, our republic, and for a number of institutions that we need to be stable in order for this country to move forward. And that's why I thought that Trump just has to go, and his rhetoric and his base are just, it's just out of control.
Yeah, I there's so many things that are going to happen between now and inauguration that we don't need to dig deep in, but how he responds as things get closer, as it becomes official, I'm going to be curious about. Obviously, they're doing everything they can to make it sound like this is not official. And you mentioned Michigan. You mentioned, you told me about it. It was the Secretary of State there as well, right? They surrounded her house with armed people surrounded her house on Saturday night and were demanding that she take some action to overturn the election.
Yeah, the Secretary of State for Michigan, Jocelyn Benson, like, armed protesters get to her house Saturday night. They've got megaphones, they've got guns, and, you know, she's got like a 4-year-old kid, which has just got to be terrifying, right? Like,
sure.
I mean, and you know, everyone was angry, and it's all related to Trump and the election loss. And, you know, they want her you know, they weren't asking her to do something specific. They were just basically protesting the outcome of the election, and they chose her house to do it armed with megaphones. No one was arrested or charged, which, you know, I guess, okay. Because some people say, well, since no one was arrested or charged, it's not a big deal. But I mean, listen, if you had a mob of people show up at your house, even if it was only 20 people and it's just you and your family, which is, you know, I mean, if you, Jim, you're, you know, a single guy,
yeah.
You know, but I mean, like, maybe she's got a husband and her 4-year-old son. I mean, like, it's two adults and a child versus 20 people, you know, some with of them guns. Being armed. Right. Like, that's got to be terrifying. And the fact that nobody was charged, I think, is interesting. But that doesn't mean that it's okay. Right.
Right.
Like, if you want to do your protesting and all that other stuff, you go do it. You know, you do it at her office or whatever, but you don't do it at her home. And I don't think, listen, the flip side of this is, you know, people will say, well, Black Lives Matter and everything else. Listen, I don't, like, when Black Lives Matter protests or, you know, protest over civil justice and everything else, when they spill over and they impact, you know, other, you know, regular citizens and they negative impact regular citizens, even that thing that happened in St. Louis with the weird Miami Vice couple that brought the guns out. You know, the protests that happened there, you know, those people busted down a gate and went into, you know, a section of town that they didn't need to be in. And that whole thing happened with that, you know, with that couple and their guns. And I think they ended up being charged with some pretty flimsy charges, but that still wasn't acceptable. Right. And I just think these protests where we're going specifically to people's houses, you say you're not threatening them, but you show up to my house with a gun, I'm going to see that as a threat, you know?
Agreed. The other story from Michigan that I absolutely love is my new sweetheart, Melissa Carone. So she was in front of the State House of Representatives of Michigan, which, as far as I know, has no authority to do with any of this. Because of that, they're not even sworn. She's sitting right next to Rudy Giuliani. And going on this rant and just being a spiteful, weird, she was acting like the bratty girl at the bar who's just been cut off. And by the way, she was slurring her speech so badly, I wanted to play a game called Drunk, High, or Both. And my money would be on drunk.
Her initial, you know, testimony at that hearing, at the hearing last week was,
bizarre.
I mean, it felt like a joke, right? Like, this can't be real. I was hoping before we had to sort of kind of quarantine because of my cold here, I wanted to be able to kind of play a little bit of that, but so much has happened, like, we're not going to have time for it. But, I mean, just her testimony was just so bizarre, and it felt like she was under the influence of something. And if that's just how she normally talks, then she's probably not an overly effective attorney to begin with, because I think she's technically an attorney, I believe, in the state of New Jersey.
No, she's not an attorney. You're mixing her up with the other crazy lady in Michigan. She describes herself as a cybersecurity expert.
Here's part of the reason why I didn't really dig into this too much. I think what they're doing is very irresponsible. And by they, I mean Rudy Giuliani, the Trump campaign. But they're holding these hearings in these places that have no effect on the election, right? Like, whatever happens there, it's not going to change certification. It's not going to change the legal cases that are pending. It's not going to have any impact on that at all. All it's doing, it's strictly for show, and it's to get people who already are on their side to just be that much more worked up and on their side. And I just think it's very dangerous and irresponsible. So to me, you treat things like that, you acknowledge that they're happening, and then you shut them down and you ignore them. But because of this TMZ fucking world that we live in, there are certain people who are going to dig into this and get entertained by it and put it out there like, hey, look how dumb this is. But I think that's doing, I think that's still causing, that's still dangerous and it's still causing harm. But here we are.
Well, so one of the things when she was asked why more people weren't coming forward, she
said,
these
aren't real fucking people. That's the problem. Like these, like you can't take these fucking people seriously. Like, okay, sorry.
Okay. So she's saying, well, I can't even get a job. Well, maybe you can't get a job because you're testifying drunk, or maybe it's because you just got off probation. She was on probation for a year after pleading guilty to some sort of a harassment charge. And the incident that led to that was she was fucking a married guy, took a video was taken on her phone with said married guy, and then sent to the guy's wife, I believe multiple times. The phone got tracked to her. She claims it was the guy who sent it. The guy who sent it is currently her fiancé. So, you Family Values folks out there, that's your champion. Good for you. Sorry, I think that story is too awesome not to tell.
Oh, all right. God. I mean, it's just like, it's, and the problem is if you talk, like, I mean, I don't know how many actual, you know, conservative MAGA Trump supporters listen to our show.
Probably not.
Probably very few, but it's, yeah, I would love for them to sit down and look at this and look me straight in the face and explain to me how they take these people seriously.
I would love to see someone try to do that because go ahead.
No, I just don't see how they could do it. You know, I really don't.
One of the arguments that like always get thrown at me and I fucking hate it because it's a total cop out is, well, Obama did the same thing. Find me an Obama person that did this. Find me a Biden person that did this. This was so over the top. I literally thought I was watching a spoof when I first came across it. And then I'm like, that's Giuliani.
I'll be the first to acknowledge there are plenty of people out there who support Obama that would be terrible. Just awful witnesses in a hearing or in any sort of trial or anything like that.
Okay, fine. But if Obama chose to put them in front of something and said, this is my guy or this is my girl, I think you would have a point. But he didn't.
Right. I mean, I just, you know, this is completely different. I mean, and this is intentional, right? Like, I mean, they don't care who they put on the stand. They're not vetting anybody. They're literally just... anyone who's willing to say anything, they're going to put out there in front of this thing, and they know that they've got momentum with their base who will literally believe anything that they put out there. Or I shouldn't say that. It's not about believe, it's that they'll support it, right? Because some of these people, I know for a fact, they know some of this stuff is bullshit, right? Like, they know it. But it's so important for them to push against the left, right? Like, they don't care. There's people that I won't have on our show anymore because, on the one hand, they know that they can't justify a lot of the things that Trump says and does, right? Like, they can't. But they will support that, anything that he says and does, because it all flies in the face of the left,
right? Right.
Like, so it flies in the face of the progressive left.
Own the libs.
Right. It's all about owning the libs and batting down the progressive democratic agenda, whatever that might, you know, the liberal project.
You mean the socialist, communist agenda?
Socialism, all that, yes, all that stuff. It's all about pushing back against that idea. So they're willing to support the bullshit that Trump and his administration and his team put out there. And they believe that it's for the greater good of the country, right? Like, if,
sure.
Like, their thought process is, if you just do what we say, right, then everything will be fine. Don't worry about the racism. Don't worry about the misogyny. Don't worry about the anti-gay stuff. That's just the fringes. There's just a few of them. Don't worry about them. For the most part, we're good. But it's just the left is so bad that we're willing to support, you know, lies, inaccuracy, corruption, everything else, just for the sake of saying, fuck you. Now, the problem is that on the progressive left, like, they have the same issues, right? Like, they've got their extreme, you know, they're very, very loud extremes that you really don't want to have complete control of or any control of the government. And you have people who will just blindly follow the left And any bullshit that's thrown out there, and they'll put inaccuracies out there. They'll you know, they trust CNN wholeheartedly. They will whatever Sean King says, then that's got to be truth. So it's a problem on both sides. But right now, the side that's in power or about to or is getting moved out of power is causing the most damage right now.
Again, you cannot find me an Obama like Melissa Carone. What was I going to say about her, though? Oh, so I didn't take it seriously. I didn't realize it was a real thing until I saw her sitting next to Giuliani, and just came out now Giuliani has COVID. And what I thought was really weird was Trump announcing that Trump gave an update on how Rudy Giuliani was doing. I thought it was bizarre. Just because why would the President of the United States be giving a health update on his attorney?
That's a good question. Trump did that because he used, like, if you think about how he made the announcement, it was less about Rudy Giuliani having COVID, and it was more about him. He got a dig in against the election and how corrupt it was and fraudulent. He got, the China virus thing in there.
Right, he doesn't
call it COVID or whatever. He calls it the China virus. So Trump making that statement wasn't about him giving a health update on Rudy Giuliani. It was just another way for him to say, hey, the election was fraudulent and the China virus came from China and it's China's fault, not my fault. Remember, China virus, China's fault. And Rudy got it. I'm sure he'll be fine because he's great.
So you mentioned that people aren't accepting the elections, or I said that. And two people who are accepting the results of the elections are Brad Parscale and Attorney General Barr. Those are two of the biggest Trump bootlickers out there, and they're saying it. And there were rumors that Trump was going to fire Barr for having acknowledged that there was no evidence of broad-scale election misconduct. And if Trump would have fired him, it would have further proven what I said earlier, that he's a narcissistic sociopath, easy for me to say. And what really, really, and this, now I'm going to stop goofing. Under the Trump administration, there have been 8 federal executions. The first ones in 17 years.
Hold on, man. You're kind of glazing over something here. I think, first of all, when it comes to William Barr and both Brad Pascal or Parscale are really cut from the same cloth in terms of who and what they are, right? Like, yes, they were Trump bootlickers as long as it was most advantageous to them, but now Brad Parscale is out of the loop, right?
Sure.
So his need to really be the bootlicker is gone, right? Like, there's no, like, he can't get back into that inner circle. What value does he really bring at this point with his legal situation? So Brad Parscale recognizes that, okay, well, this train is basically, or, you know, like this train has run its course. And so he can acknowledge it because there's also nothing that Trump can do to him at this point.
He right? cannot pardon him.
Yeah, but I mean, Trump wasn't going to pardon him anyway. I don't
think. Who knows?
I think that, I think Parscale's too far down the line. I think that, you're one. I mean, I think the next time that Trump says his name, you can get a, barely even knew the guy.
Right.
I wouldn't recognize him if you walked in the room, one of those sort of tweets. And as a, with William Barr, his whole career he's been an opportunist. And he used this as an opportunity, I think, in my opinion, to, I think he thought that it would be a way to really secure his legacy. And I think he really believed that Trump was going to get reelected. So that would mean that he would have, 8 years of being the attorney general, I guess 6 years of being the attorney general to really kind of, kind of manipulate the Justice Department into his vision and go down in history as blah, 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 blah. But now he sees that ship is sinking, and you know, he recognizes, all right, well, this opportunity is gone, so I'm going to just move on to the next thing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Barr resigned before the inauguration. You know, like, I get, like, he's the type of guy where he's not going to give Trump the satisfaction of firing him. Like, he'll just resign and keep it moving and then write a book.
Well, there have been plenty of those. So I did start going down the execution road because I find this extraordinarily alarming. Like I said, 8 executions, federal executions under Trump, none in the last 17 years. But the part that freaks me out is he apparently was inquiring into getting the firing squad and the electric chair back into legal means of execution by the federal government. The reason he's doing that is because it's very hard to get the drug cocktail that is currently the approved method of lethal execution. And he wants to get these people killed before he gets out of office. And someone wanting to do that is... When people compare Trump to Putin and when people compare him to Kim Jong-un and Putin, I really thought that was a bridge too far. I thought, yeah, I don't like him. The narcissism is obvious. But this takes it to the next level. I'm now going to say all those people that I criticized for going too far and saying he's as bad as those guys. He, given the opportunity, he probably would be. And he's trying to get that opportunity now. And I find that psychologically horrifying. I don't believe he'll be successful. But the fact that he's trying tells me what kind of person he really is. Not that I was ever a fan, but this takes it to the next level for me.
Yeah, this is, none of this is a surprise. Like, this is par for the course. And I think, I guess, with me, like, if we're gonna have the death penalty, right, then, like, how we choose to do it, to me, like, you know, people are going to make a big deal about the firing squad and everything else. But, I mean, there's states that still have a firing squad. I believe, I'm going to say either Colorado or Utah still has a firing
squad. Utah still has hanging.
Right. So, and I don't know. I feel like Georgia may have. Does Georgia still have the electric chair or no?
I don't know, but it would not shock me.
Yeah. I think.
No, that was an accidental pun.
Right. That's good. You know, like him looking at different methods, because the drugs are hard to get, like it's not surprising, right? Like his whole thing, like one, a big part of his thing is law and order and being tough on crime. And what's the ultimate way to show that you're tough on crime is to, you know, push through executions that have been lingering and getting those cases off the books. So, I think it's interesting. I think it would be interesting to compare, you know, to look at the people that he's executed and then also, you know, look at the number of people that he's pardoned. And then, you know, how many people has he pardoned?
Well, how many will he be pardoning in the next couple of weeks?
Right. Well, it's exactly right. How many people has he pardoned? How many will he be pardoning over the next couple of weeks? And then what are their backgrounds look like? Is it people with, you know, low-level drug offenses that are, you know, incarcerated for overly extended period of time? Or is it, you know, white-collar criminals that all have expressed support specifically for Trump? You know, it'll be, that's really where I think it tells you a lot, yeah. Right? Like, now, in theory, he could surprise us. And he could go through and pardon a bunch of black and brown people who are in there for low level charges or, you know, who've been in jail for, you know, 30 years over, you know, cocaine and crack or whatever it is. But I don't think so. The election is over. You know, black people came out pretty aggressively against him. You know, he can claim that he got more black votes than any Republican has, which is true, but then Biden got that many more. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he wraps this all up. And I think, so if you take the number of people he's executed and then you compare it to the number of people that he's pardoned and you look at who he's pardoned, I think that will kind of give a better picture as to what you're saying, right? Because I don't think it's going to come out favorable to Trump, but I think that's the most fair way to do it.
The fact that he's trying to do it is what sets me off. And I've had no trouble criticizing Trump when he talks like an idiot. In fact, I've done it a whole lot on this recorded program, so people know I've done that. Now I got to do the same to Joe Biden. Did you hear what he said about the vaccine?
No, I didn't.
He said they haven't figured out how to get it out of the I don't know if you said vial or not. That's what it will come in. They don't know how to get it out of that into a needle and then into your arm, into a syringe and then into your arm. Yeah, Joe, we figured that one out. I've been in the pharma industry for a while. You stick the needle in, you pull the stuff out, you put on a new needle so you don't draw in any particles from the stopper, and you put it in someone's arm. I'm guessing that someone told him something like they haven't figured out how to deliver the virus, and that's what he thought it meant. And what they're probably really talking about is the fact that you need to transport it at an extremely low temperature. So I don't know what he was told. I don't know what he was trying to communicate. I know what he did communicate was absolutely fucking idiotic. And I was literally listening to him on my couch doing stuff. He said that and my head spun around so fast you thought I'd gotten punched by Mike Tyson. So Joe they need to do a good job handling this guy. Young Joe Biden was a gaffe machine. Old Joe Biden is going to be way worse. And the real winners in this election are the right-wing talking heads, because now they can go right back to focusing their energy on the president and talking about what an idiot he is, and they'll have plenty of material, and they can stop whining about AOC.
They'll never stop whining about AOC because I don't think she's not going anywhere. So, I mean, that's just not going to happen. But, yeah, you're right. You know, Biden is prone to just say dumb shit. You know, his brain gets to moving too fast, and then the words that come out just don't make sense. It's something that he does, and I think we got to hold him accountable when he says things like that. And then we also have to look at, you know, the policies that get implemented and hold him accountable for those as well. And you know, we have to keep the same sort of energy that we have for Trump and all his bullshit that we're going to encounter with Biden and his. I don't think Biden's not going to be nearly as bombastic and over the top with what he says and how he says it. So, you know, we won't be criticizing the delivery as much unless it's cases like this. But I think we need to pay close attention to the policies that are being implemented and what they're asking us to accept as reasonable, logical, and helpful, and not just accept it because it's not Trump.
You know, agreed.
I'm just making a broader statement. It's not necessarily – I mean, you're right. That's a dumb thing to say. But, I mean, Trump said plenty of dumb shit that I was like, wow, that's really stupid. But in terms of policy impact, it doesn't have any, so I don't really care. And that's kind of how I view, like, Trump said plenty of, like, you know, the whole thing where
injecting bleach, which he didn't actually say, but he did ask him to put clears inside the body.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, that and, you know, everybody made a big deal about him saying dropping a bomb on a hurricane. It's just like, hey, she's not, like, they're not going to let him actually drop a bomb in a hurricane. I get why it sounds bad, but at the end of the day, I'm worried about policy.
Agreed. And speaking of policy, four new states have legalized recreational marijuana: New Jersey, Montana, Arizona, and South Dakota, which I believe gets our number up to 15. And it'll be very interesting to see from a policy standpoint if Kamala Harris is able to persuade the Congress and ultimately the president to sign into law the removal of the federal ban on cannabis. Because, frankly, we've all acknowledged it's stupid that it's classified the same way as heroin. And I think it's been pretty much proven to be safe, and I've heard of people enjoying it recreationally. I cannot confirm or deny whether I have done so. My mom's listening again, so I had to put that caveat in there.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things where my position doesn't stay. Like, this needs to be, like, when I see something on the Senate floor that's actually going to receive a vote, then it's worth talking about, you know. But right now, I mean, Congress just passed something, the MORE Act, I believe, or the MORE Bill or whatever, the MORE Bill, and which is great. But the question is, will it ever see the light of day in the Senate with Mitch McConnell as the Senate Majority Leader? I don't think we'll see it anytime soon.
Well, you know, I'm hoping not to see Mitch McConnell as Senate Majority Leader, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah, that's, I mean, but we, you know, I mean, we need him to not be it. And as for right now, he is until we get things figured out down in Georgia. But I mean, as long as Senate McConnell is there, I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to see anything happen, right? Like, I mean, like the guy is just not going to let cannabis legislation pass. And I don't know, maybe it has something to do with the opioid issue in his state, right? You would think that he would be all in favor of it, but considering the amount of money he got to Big Pharma, that dished out a lot of those pills, I don't know, maybe that's the thing that's keeping him from doing the reasonable insane thing. Or maybe it's just a fuck the liberals, you know, Democrats, I'm not going to do it, you know?
Well, I think there will be a lot of pressure on him, even from some Republicans, to put it up to a vote if it gets there. And if it gets there, I'm pretty confident it will pass. But
okay, but I mean, the fact that you think that McConnell gives a fuck about some, I mean, what Republican can walk into his office and put any sort of pressure on Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, fair point. Shit. All right, fine.
I mean, that's just like, again, and that's kind of like, listen, what you get him out of the way, it's a different conversation. Or something happens behind the scenes that we're completely unaware of, and he does a complete 180, and then he puts it out there, that's fine. I just don't, that second thing, I just don't see that happening. And so the only thing that clears the way for marijuana legalization or cannabis legalization is getting Mitch McConnell out of that position of Senate Majority Leader. And, you know, that's up in the air right now.
Right. Well, you just took some of the wind out of my sails. Thanks, pal. All right. Damn it. So last week on Monday Night Football, Chris Collinsworth said something to the effect of, "The fans here in Pittsburgh are really strong. Some of the women came at me with questions, and I was like, wow, these are really intense or really strong fans." And immediately people were calling on him to apologize, and I was absolutely furious that he apologized. That complaint
Wait, hold on,
is...
hold on, wait. What just happened? Wait, why are people mad? Why are you furious? What did I miss?
People were mad because he was implying that women having strong opinions and knowledge of sports was shocking to him. And like, girls know sports too. Okay, some girls are really into sports. Some are not. But by and large, fans of football, and go to any sports bar on a Sunday, you will see some women who are really into the game, some who are there having fun and being cute, and some guys who are there, but you'll see a lot more guys than women. And the people who are really into it, and the, you know, if I told you, well, whatever, I'm not even going to go down this rabbit hole, but the notion that women are as into pro sports and therefore are going to know things like, what did you think about going cover zero on that play and letting that bomb get past the guy or whatever, being surprised that a bunch of women came up to you and said that is understandable. And to get so offended that you demand an apology for a guy making a statement that is A, fundamentally true, and B, not insulting to anyone. He was actually complimenting the Pittsburgh Steelers fans. I'm mad that he didn't take a stand and say, that's stop. I'm a color commentator. I made a comment that's valid. If your feelings are hurt, you're probably not one of the people watching football anyway. And now I'm saying shit that people are going to be offended by, and I am not apologizing to anyone. And by the way, I hate Chris Collinsworth.
I'm neutral on him. Actually, there's only one commentator that I hate in all of sports. Like, I don't mind anybody except for one. And I haven't heard him a lot, so I won't even bring his name up.
Dan Fouts.
He may have played quarterback for the San Diego Tigers in the 80s. And his name rounds with Pouts, because he pouts about not winning Super Bowls because the Steelers won them. But anyway, you know, the thing with Chris Collinsworth, I think he, listen, he, I'm sure he probably didn't want to apologize. He probably caught him off guard. And NBC said,
I'm sure you're right.
You gotta apologize or shut him up, right?
I'm sure you're right.
He's in a tough spot. I don't think that he's, you know, I don't know. I know Chris Collins. No, I shouldn't say that. I've been listening to Chris Collinsworth for, I don't know, 20 years now. And or maybe not that long, 10, 15, however long, but I've been listening to him for a long time. And I think he was just making a general statement like, wow, I mean, everybody's coming up to me, men, women, kids, everybody, and everybody knows everything about all the things. And it's great. These are really smart fans. That's obviously what he was saying without even hearing it. But, you know, there's that hypersensitivity that that really turns people off about the progressive left, right? Like that's the shit why people will willingly run to a guy like Donald Trump, is that when you flip out and demand that of Chris Collinsworth, who made a very, you know, innocuous statement, right? He makes this innocuous statement, and now you're demanding apologies and you want people suspended and fired and protests and blah, 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 blah.
Agreed.
Right? Like that's the sort of shit where it's just like, all right, fuck you guys. You know, and that's why people buy into Trump and everything else, because Trump doesn't have to say anything. He doesn't have to present. All he has to do is say, hey, whatever those guys do, I'm going to do the opposite of what they do, right? Like, I support anything that's the opposite of what they do. And the progressive left continues to just give him ammunition with dumb shit like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I'm so pissed off. My real anger is with the people who were so hurt by these words from Chris Collinsworth that I'm going to tweet to NBC. Shut the fuck up. If you don't like the show, don't watch it, period. Whenever, you know, conservatives come to me and say, I don't want to have to see this show with this gay guy on it, I say, don't watch it. Well, if true words about a sport offend you, don't watch the sport. But shut the fuck up. I mean, if I were to go to your gym, so you're a competitive powerlifter. If I were to go to your gym and say, wow, people in this gym are really strong. Some of these girls can really lift some weight. I'm doing exactly what Chris Collinsworth did. I'm 100% right. And in general, men are stronger than women. If I say that and it offends you, then you're offended by reality. Sorry. And if you come at me
I'm just going to tell you, do not come to my gym and don't say that, because the women at my gym are stronger than you, and they are very hyper-feminist. So,
well, if they listen to the show and they want my address so they can protest outside my house with guns, and I mean biceps, not firearms, they're welcome to do so.
Okay.
All right.
I think you're, I mean, no one's going to come to your house and protest and whatever, but they may say, all right, then, you know, put up or shut up and have you put weight on the bar. My gym is a bad example, but I get what you're saying.
All right. And is anything that I said inaccurate?
Yeah, dude, it's 2020. That's the other thing, too. It's 2020, right? This concept of being surprised at women doing stuff like that's the overarching thing that, you know, that you guys, right? It's you guys, I would say, probably age 45-ish and up. You get like this whole, you got to let that shit go, right? Like it's really obnoxious that people are doing that. Oh, he needs to apologize. And how dare he, completely overreacting. But just the sentiment at this point, right? Like there's so many women out. Do you just go to the NFL Network and you go to ESPN, any of the women on those networks, they're there for a reason, because they know their shit. And you can go anywhere in this town, right, on any Sunday and talk to plenty of women who know the sport. We all know it. So the idea, like, and listen, most of the men who talk about football don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Literally don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Like, they just say random shit that makes no fucking sense, which is why it's hard for me to watch a football game in public, because it makes me want to murder people, right? Like, so that's the other thing too, right? Like, most of the men are completely oblivious to what the fuck they're seeing on TV, other than the guy scoring touchdowns. So let's not make it seem like men have this, like, they don't, right? Like, I mean, plenty of women out there know the game inside and out, but there's plenty of women who don't give a fuck, and like you said, they just want to be cute. So let's just stop making these generalizations, right? And hey, these fans, these men, women, kids, everybody, they know the fucking game. It's great, right? People need to stop overreacting to it. But the idea, these ideas that, well, men know sports better than women. All right, some men know sports, some sports better than some women, right? But the generalities, like, that's the shit that's getting you guys in trouble. And, you know, these women are strong. This is surprising to me.
Like, that's not what I said at all.
I'm not saying that's what you say, Jim, but I'm just saying in general, right, you got to get over these generalities, right? Like, it's a generational thing, right? It's been tripping you guys up for an extended period of time. And just, like, you can get mad about it. I don't give a fuck. I'm not the one getting mad about it.
No, I'm mad at the hypersensitivity. And
be mad.
Well, because there are so many legitimate things where I've stood by and said, you can't do this anymore. I've said multiple times on the show, you know, things that used to be acceptable in the office are not. And I will stand by that for, you know, what used to be cool was never really cool. And the fact that it used to be accepted should not be an excuse for doing it now. But if you can't make a comment that is in general accurate, or if people can't, let me say, fine, you shouldn't have said
it's not
it.
Accurate,
all right, fine. Forget the accuracy of it. If you feel the need hold on.
That's
hold
the fucking
on.
Problem. No, it's not no. accurate.
Okay. And if, all right, this could go a whole bunch of ways. But when Stephen A. Smith said Dwayne Haskins was mainly a running quarterback, that was not accurate at all, provable by statistics. So he said something dumb, and I'm happy to call him out for saying something dumb. The idea that I would then tweet to ESPN and say, you need to make Stephen A. Smith apologize. No, because it's a dumb statement made by a guy talking about a sport. And if people are going to get that bent out of shape about that, then what's next? I'm sorry.
Okay, slippery slope of whatever. But I think the lesson here for Chris Collinsworth now.
Okay.
And for you, and just this idea in general, like, just, you know, especially when it comes to entertainment shit, whether it's sports or race car, I don't know. Like, it's just, you just have to shed the idea of being so surprised when women do it, right? Like, I mean, like, that sort of thought process needs to go. You got women fucking coaching in the game at this point.
Yeah.
Right, like, you've got women coaching on NFL teams and NCAA teams. You've got women coaching in the NBA, and they're not just there as figureheads. These women, you know, there's a woman for the Browns. They said she's a damn good coach. The woman, there's a woman for the San Antonio Spurs who's going to get a head coaching job at any point in time in the NBA. I mean, it's we're right around the corner from seeing it. So I just think that time of being just so surprised that we have to call it out that women know sports, I just think that the sun has set on that. And so Chris, should he have to apologize? No. But I think what this does, it just puts it to bed, right? Like, he won't say it again, and I think everybody takes in mind, like, all right, like, we've moved on to a new thing, and the expectations are just of women's knowledge of sports and certain venues of entertainment are just different.
Okay. Well, I think it's a fair discussion. Go ahead.
Right. I agree with you on the ridiculousness of the hypersensitivity that has always irked me. But it doesn't necessarily mean that those people who are hypersensitive, like, the base level of the argument isn't necessarily wrong. Right? Like, it's just like, we do need to move past this idea that women don't know this or women don't know that. How they present that message can be a lot better. And it doesn't need to be this ridiculous with, you know, demanding this and demanding that. But it moved the needle. Collinsworth apologized, and the chances of someone saying something like that in the future are probably slim. And the next person who says something along those lines, I guarantee you, is going to be a 70, 80-year-old guy who will shortly then thereafter retire.
Okay, well, again, we're sort of hitting two different topics here, but I think we covered them pretty well. I know you're feeling rough, and I know the Steelers are coming on in a few minutes. So enjoy your game. I'll be going to enjoy mine later in the evening. Next week, the Bills and Steelers play. Do you have any Do we want to watch that game together? It's a night game, which means we can't watch it out. But then again,
is it Monday night?
Monday night. Oh, maybe no. Might be Sunday night.
I don't like the schedule.
I think it's Sunday night. In fact, it's definitely Sunday night.
We'll figure it out.
We'll see how you're feeling first of all.
Yeah, let's figure it out. See how I'm feeling. Let's see what if I still feel I need the quarantine and all that other stuff. But we'll get that figured out offline.
All right, sounds good. Well, thank you everyone for listening. This is Whiskey Congress. We are at Whiskey Congress on social media, and I would like to throw a quick shout-out to my nephew, Tyler, who competed in the World Axe Throwing Championships in Alaska, actually along with my brother. He did not finish in the top six, so you won't be seeing him on ESPN, but he did finish in the top 18.
Nice.
So he's the 18th best axe thrower in the world.
And they went to Alaska.
What's that?
And he got to go to Alaska to do it.
No, Atlanta.
Oh, I thought you said Alaska.
Okay, no, Atlanta. Very different.
Well, Atlanta, I'm not a huge Atlanta fan, but that's still probably very cool for him. How old is he?
21.
21?
Yep.
Nice. Well, good for him. What's his name again?
Tyler.
Well, congratulations, Tyler. It's still a good showing. And, hopefully he sticks with it and gets another shot at it next year.
Let's hope. All right. Thanks again for everyone for listening. We're done.